All right, so are you ready to like dive into some seriously intense history?
Always up for a good history lesson, especially when it involves high stakes and tough choices.
Well, buckle up, because today we're tackling the Sunningdale Agreement. It's 1973, we're talking Northern Ireland, and finding common ground back then, oof, it felt kind of like trying to, put out a fire with gasoline,
Yeah, that's one way to put it. It was a truly volatile situation. And smack dab in the middle of this whole chaotic scene, you have William Whitelaw. He gets appointed Secretary of State for Northern Ireland right after the British government steps in with direct rule. Talk about a tough first day on the job, right?
Right. Talk about walking into a pressure cooker. I mean,
Yeah.
he's suddenly responsible for not only calming the storm, but also finding a political solution that somehow works for both the nationalist community, who were mostly Catholic, and the unionist community, who were mainly Protestant. And let's just say they weren't exactly best friends.
Understatement of the century.
For real. And our main source for this whole deep dive is 06, the introduction of direct rule and the Sunningdale Agreement, 1972-1974.pdf. And let me tell you, it really highlights just how much of a tightrope walk this was for Whitelaw. I mean, talk about impossible odds.
Absolutely. From day one, he's got people demanding a united Ireland breathing down his neck while the loyalists are giving him the side eye, convinced that any tiny concession is a total betrayal.
It's kind of mind-blowing to think about the pressure he must have felt right off the bat. I mean, the source even mentions this massive demonstration, like just days into his time in office. Thousands of people, can you imagine the tension? Must have been palpable.
Oh, for sure. And that tension only went like 100 times higher when he made that decision to grant special category status to IRA prisoners.
Which, yeah, let's be real, a lot of people saw that as basically rewarding terrorism.
Exactly. The loyalists were furious, but for Whitelaw, it was a gamble, plain and simple. A way to maybe, possibly, open up some kind of dialogue. Risky move, for sure.
So how on earth does all of this lead to the Sunningdale Agreement? It seems like everything was just getting more and more tangled.
Well, see, in the years leading up to Sunningdale, there was this almost desperate scramble to find some kind of answer, some way out of the mess. And Whitelaw, to his credit, knew he couldn't just waltz in and impose order like it was nothing. He had to find a political framework, something that actually addressed the roots of the whole conflict.
Which is where the Darlington talks come into play, right? Those seem like a pretty crucial step on the road to Sunningdale.
They were. Those talks, along with that white paper that came after, those were the first real concrete steps towards saying, hey, power sharing in Northern Ireland, that's got to be a thing. And this wasn't just like tinkering around the edges. This was about dismantling the whole system, the very structure that had fueled the conflict for so long.
So that's where this whole idea of a new Northern Ireland starts taking shape, one where both unionists and nationalists actually get a seat at the table. Man, that must have sounded radical at the time.
Radical's one word for it. You got to remember, for ages, the system had basically been silencing the nationalist voice. But then you have these Darlington talks, and they lead to this discussion paper, The Future of Northern Ireland. It lays out all these like core principles for a new government, and guess what? Power sharing is front and center. Then you've got the white paper in 73, which takes those principles and turns them into a real, tangible proposal.
It's kind of wild to see how these documents, born from all that tension and debate, really laid the groundwork for everything that was to come.
And yet, you can't just go around proposing such massive changes without ruffling a few feathers, can you?
Oh, absolutely not. And the reactions to the white paper, even before Sunningdale, just goes to show you how bumpy this road was going to be.
Because even within the unionist community, there were these huge rifts. Some were willing to at least entertain the idea of sharing power, but a lot of others, well, they saw it as a threat, pure and simple, like this slippery slope toward a united Ireland that they absolutely did not want. And that fear, that deep down anxiety about what their place in the world was going to be, well, that's at the core of so much of what happens next. And it's with all this craziness going on, all this complexity and tension, that the Sunningdale Agreement actually emerges. It was this fragile, almost desperate attempt to find a way across the divide. But as I'm sure we'll see, the road to peace, well, it's rarely ever a straight line. It's easy to get lost in the weeds with all the political back and forth. But the Sunningdale Agreement, it was about way more than just divvying up power, right? It was really getting at this like fundamental question of how you even begin to get communities that have all this like ingrained animosity to coexist, you know?
Peacefully, even.
Yeah, it's like, where do you even start? Especially in a place like Northern Ireland, where you've got decades of like suspicion and violence and just plain old bad blood.
It's a lot to overcome.
It's a huge, huge challenge. And the agreement itself, it kind of reflects that. It tried to tackle those deep-seated issues on a couple of main fronts. So first, you have this idea of a power-sharing executive, meaning both unionist and nationalist parties, they both have a real say in how Northern Ireland's actually run.
Okay. Makes sense. And then the other big piece is this Council of Ireland concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which was all about trying to boost cooperation between Northern Ireland and the Republic.
Exactly. And that right there, that was a big one. Hugely controversial, even at the time.
Because on the one hand, for anyone who is like dreaming of a united Ireland, this council thing, it looked like a step in the right direction.
Mm.
Like, okay, at least our aspirations are being heard. But for loyalists, man, that was a line in the sand.
A huge red flag. It just played into all their deepest fears. Remember that whole slogan from the UUC, the one that was like, Dublin is just a Sunningdale away? That really sums it up, you know? That fear that the agreement was just going to snowball into a united Ireland. And it was a fear that the UUC, they really knew how to exploit.
Talk about a powder keg. So you've got this agreement trying to walk this incredibly fine line, but then there's the reality on the ground, which is that violence is always there, bubbling under the surface.
And that's the tragedy of it all, right? You have these glimmers of hope, these attempts at like actual dialogue and compromise, but then looming over everything, you've got these paramilitary groups, the IRA, the UDA. They could just derail the whole thing with one act of violence. Their very presence, it casts this long shadow over everything, like a constant reminder of how fragile peace really is.
It's so easy to get caught up in the big picture, but the source material really does a good job of reminding you about the human cost. You know, the bombing of that bus depot, the attacks on Bloody Friday, the Clody bombing. Those weren't just headlines. Those were real people, real lives torn apart by this conflict.
Exactly. Those events, those individual tragedies, they bring it all home. Peace isn't some abstract idea. It's about creating a world where everyday people, no matter what their background is, can just, you know, live their lives without fear. And Sunningdale, even with its flaws, that's what it was ultimately trying to achieve.
So it went way beyond just the political stuff. This was about people's lives, their very existence.
Absolutely. And the weight of all those lives, all those hopes and anxieties, it fell on the shoulders of just a few people. We've mentioned Whitelaw, Faulkner, but there were so many others who were right in the thick of it. People like Gerry Adams, Martin McGuinness, Ian Paisley. These were figures who could influence entire communities with just their words, for better or worse.
Like this crazy pressure cooker of history, and these individuals are trying to find a way to navigate it, to find some kind of escape route out of the chaos. And some, like I'm thinking of Liam Cosgrave, the Taoiseach at the time, they saw the danger so clearly. He talked about the agreement being threatened by, and I'm quoting here, violent men on both sides who keep hate and fear alive.
And he was right. The entire agreement, it hinged on so many things falling into place. Political will, compromise, but probably the most important thing, the thing that was always going to be a gamble, was the willingness of these paramilitary groups to actually lay down their arms.
And it was a gamble that, sadly, didn't pay off. I mean, you look back, that Ulster Workers' Council strike in 74, that feels like the moment when everything really starts to unravel.
Oh, without a doubt. It was a turning point for sure. The UWC, and they were a loyalist group, they basically brought Northern Ireland to a standstill. Essential services were down, the economy was on its knees, and it just showed the sheer force of their opposition to the agreement. It was proof that peace, you couldn't just hammer it out in a room full of politicians. It needed buy-in from the people it was supposed to be helping.
So with this massive strike going on, it makes you wonder about the British government's response. Like, did they just totally underestimate how much resistance there would be, or were they kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place?
Yeah, it's something that historians still go back and forth on, you know. But I think it's safe to say that how they handled that whole strike, especially once Harold Wilson took over as prime minister, well, let's just say it wasn't their finest hour. A lot of people, especially nationalists, they felt totally abandoned, like they couldn't trust Westminster to have their backs.
And for those who are really hoping that Sunningdale was, the answer, this must have been a crushing blow. Like, talk about your hopes being dashed.
It was a massive setback. There's no two ways about it. But here's the thing about peace processes, and I think this is important. They're messy. Like, rarely straightforward. Even when they, you know, kind of blow up in your face, there's still lessons to be learned.
Right. Sometimes you have to take a step back to move forward.
Exactly. And the thing about Sunningdale, even though it ultimately failed, the core ideas, the principles behind it, like power sharing, acknowledging the Irish dimension, that whole thing about needing buy-in from both communities, Those didn't just vanish. They became the foundation for the peace talks that came later, the ones that eventually led to the Good Friday Agreement.
So maybe not a complete failure, after all.
Yeah.
More like a stepping stone on the path, even if it was a pretty painful step to take.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Mm. And what's kind of amazing is that Sunningdale, it wasn't just about stopping the violence, right? It was about daring to imagine a whole different future for Northern Ireland, one where communities that had always been defined by what divided them could somehow find a way to actually, like, coexist.
It really makes you think, though, how do you even begin to heal those wounds? All right. To bridge those divides. Was that even realistic?
It was, and honestly still is, an incredibly tough, like, uphill battle. There are going to be setbacks, disappointments. It's unavoidable. But the Sunningdale Agreement, even though it fell apart, it shows us that hope is a powerful thing. It's a reminder that even when the divisions run deep, talking to each other, even if it's messy and uncomfortable, is always a better option than resorting to violence.
It's a message that everyone should hear, no matter where they're from. Because when you get down to it, Sunningdale, it's a story about us, about how we deal with conflict, how we find ways to come together, about having the guts to reach across the aisle, so to speak, to choose hope over hate, even when all the odds are stacked against you.
Yeah, and that, I think, is the biggest takeaway from Sunningdale. Peace isn't some finish line you cross. It's a journey, and it's one that takes, like, serious dedication and this belief that a shared future, it really is possible, and that's a journey worth taking, for sure.
That's a great point to end on, I think. The story of Sunningdale, it reminds us that the past doesn't just disappear. It shapes who we are, and we all have a part to play in making things better. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious, keep asking those tough questions, and never, ever let go of hope.